Third part of a six-part series. Rebbe, we really did this up for the Rav, for the three. We said we cannot go business as usual. Rebbe, Rebbe Rakefet himself, many years ago when I was in Gross, I believe that was in 1988, I was a young man. I still feel like I'm a young man, but I remember seeing this guy walk into the social hall of Gross. He was very thin. I think his dubon, the green jacket, you know those dubon army jackets? I think his army jacket was actually heavier than he was. He walked in and went, "Who is this guy?" And he walked in, and literally, the minute he sat down, and he started making his brachas on shahakol, and all his nuances, as you say, he was a lion of Torah, and he is a lion of Torah. And I begged Rebbe to come back out of retirement. He said he's not coming out of Gross. He's only teaching in Gross. He's not going anywhere. But I said, Rebbe, this is for the Rav. And of course, I have to thank Stephanie Strauss, the Vice President of the University of Israel, who said to Rebbe, "Come on, Rebbe, this is the Rav, and this is the Baby Josh Initiative. We're a part of it." So, Rebbe's here. I don't have to give you an introduction to the tremendous amount of Torah that Rebbe has taught over the years to his Talmidim. I don't have to tell you about all his Svarim that he's written. Rakafot Aron 1, 2, 3, 4.
Is it a 5? The 5 will be out within a year or two.
The 5 will be out within a year or two. And of course, the tremendous amount of articles written throughout the years. It's a real honor and treat to have Rebbe here as a Talmud of Rebbe. He exposed me the first time to not about the Rav, but the Rav. He taught the Torah of the Rav, quoting the Rav. He didn't say Rav says this, Rav says that. He read it, he taught it, he literally breathed the Rav to life in Gross. And I'm forever grateful for his mentorship, his friendship, his kindness. And some of you that may not have been here last time, when I was a young starting rabbi, going to Los Angeles, and Rebbe came to me as I was about to get to my interview. He said, "Brian, I want to talk to you." He sat down. He said, "Okay, I think this is what you need to say for your Dvar Torah. This is what you need to do." And I listened, and he said the Dvar Torah. I'll never forget the Dvar Torah. It was so important. I'm not going to tell you to you now, but I remember the Arba Banim and the Birchas Torah, Baruch Hu, Malka, Baruch Hu, and he talked about that. That's the message that you want to give, that everyone has a chelik in Limud Torah. And that's what the Rav was about also.
Exactly.
And then, of course, he proceeded to give me stamps of the entire Los Angeles Dodgers baseball team. Rebbe, Brian, you're going to the Dodgers, you're going to Los Angeles, you want to connect to the kids, you got to know the players. And Rebbe's always been about that. That's always his style, connecting. And we are so honored that he's here. Thank you for coming out in this morning. Thank you for inspiring us all these years. And we look forward to many, many years to come of our Batzos Torah and good health and nachas.
Okay, you ready? Okay, you're recording.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Am I on? Make it a little louder, perhaps. People should be able to hear me.
Oh, wait, one second. I'm so sorry. You can't start a share without thanking the people that sponsor. So I'm just going to do that very quickly. First of all, the Yeshiva University of Israel, Yeshiva University REITs in Israel and in America. Of course, all the shuls, Beit Midrash, Beit Shemesh, Community Beit Midrash Initiative, Mizrahi, the OU, RCA, Or Torah Stone. I want to thank Judy and Zev Berman, sponsors in honor of the rabbis, who his father himself, Julie Berman, Was it a very big comment of the Rav?
Zev here.
Zev was not here. He was here last night. Of course, I want to thank the other members of the community that have sponsored me sponsorships. Some of them have asked to be anonymous. One of them, a particular Rebbe, said that he is a sub-Talmud. I don't know what that means. He said that you will know what that means.
I know.
Maybe you can explain what a sub-Talmud is. But I thought, you know, that he's below. I know Rebbe had this thing about Bimmy, Bummy, and Benny. But I didn't know what a sub-Talmud is. And then there was also a Goldie. I don't know what a sub-Talmud is, but the sub-Talmud gave a special gift in honor of this year in your honor.
A sub-Talmud is part of the new world. I give Shia Sunday, Monday in Gris, and there's a handful of people in front of me. Corona effectively killed my classes. The Kollel people view my classes as being way, way above them and beyond them. It's part of the Schottenstein generation. What are you laughing? This is a reality. The Gemara and Yoredeya, Ebenezer, it frightens them. But I do give shir, and believe it or not, while I'm giving shir, I have people in front of me, and three continents are listening, all over Israel, England, and the United States. And there's someone here, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener. When he was my student, he was playing Mark, but now I got to give him all his titles. And Mark's, for 2 years already, has been staying up all night to catch the shirm that begin 1 a.m. in Chicago, 2 a.m. in New York, 9 a.m. in Israel. So a sub-Talmud is someone like a submarine. I don't know them. They're underwater. Suddenly I walk into the La Rome Hotel, or what is it called today?
Inbal.
And someone comes running, and he hugs me and kisses me, and everyone's looking at the sheikh. It's who's he kissing there? Like, he's the Gadol Hador. And they cook me on a sheikh. It's a nice papa, krumpenik, a pishtak. And he says, Rebbe, I've listened to your shirim for 20 years now. And that's a sub-Talmud. The submarine has emerged, comes up again, and then it goes down again. Okay. Mori Rebbe, the rabbis, you know, I gave 22 years in the Kollel, and I, out of three of those shirim, I published the two volumes, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik. It's about 25 years already. No one has yet to find a mistake in those two volumes. And believe me, there are people who looked with a magnifying glass. It's not easy to talk about the Rav, because everyone has his own Rav. We all see Rebbe through our own prism. I hope I'm as honest as a human being can be in understanding the Rav. But I'm going to limit myself today to one very slight topic, the Rav and Zionism. And even there, I don't know if you're aware, about 20 years ago, I recorded 9 hours in the Kollel, which the OU issued, the whole beautiful box, 6 tapes, if you remember what tapes were, cassettes. 9 hours, the Rav and Religious Zionism, and it was the best-selling tapes that the OU ever issued. But I'm limiting myself. Those tapes are now on YU Torah. The only problem with YU Torah is it is not indexed, and I can't tell you exactly where. I have over 1,600 different she'urim, but you can find those tapes somehow, somewhere. It's Israel, Zionism. Now, in all that's gone on, and I want to compliment the community of Beit Shemesh, I want you to know that the 30th Yahrzeit of the Rav in New York, they just devoted one day to the best of my knowledge. And nowhere else except Beit Shemesh, where you've brought in some of the Rav's top Talmidim, and it's ongoing. Now, the question came up, and all my shirim, I have not taught a text since the day I got off the boat coming in Aliyah in July 5th, 1969. There are reasons why, but in America I was a Rebbe, a YU, a Rosh Yeshiva, teaching a text, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, Ravid, etc. And have a very close relationship with my Talmidim out of the 60s until today. You should be aware, my closest relationship, I can give you names of Talmidim I taught long before most of you were born. But when I came in Aliyah, I saw I would never make a living in Israel. It was some, you don't know what the economy was like back in 69, 70. It was, everything was black. And I was teaching for the State of Israel, Michal Aaron, the Jewish Agency, BMT, Gold, and you're on the books. And I said, all right, I'll never make a living, but I have to know Kol HaTorah Kula. And I started really back in 69 trying to master Kol HaTorah Kula. I have not succeeded, but no one can accuse me of not trying. And all my shayurim, I'm teaching myself. I invite you to join me. And here, a youngster from the Bronx struggle with Shas and Paiskim and Torah history. So I get all these requests. Someone went and said, a member of the Rav's family, the Rav was not a Zionist. I wanted, and I heard it from someone else. Let me begin at the beginning. And let me bring back to life a very dear student. Unfortunately, at my age, I'm afraid to answer the telephone. I think you understand why. And I've buried many students. And I want to recall one of my dearest students, Harav Yosef Tzvi Kloister. And the Klois, as I called him, was had a world of knowledge. I think I was the first Rebbe. He came from Ramaz and BMT. This is 24 Abavanel back early 70s. I think it was the first Rebbe he ever met who knew a little bit more than him. And we used to match our wits. And the Chloe studies with me in BMT, goes back to America, goes in Labriot, goes into the Rav Shir, and then he comes back and studies with me again in Israel. When he's in the Rav Shir, 77, the Rav gave a talk in memory of his wife. A beautiful Pesach talk. And the Rav develops the idea in the talk that Pesach is not the holiday of Eretz Yisrael. The Rav quotes the Moreh Nevuchim, the holiday of Eretz Yisrael is Sukkot. And the Rav develops it. Klausner walks out, and he's a little bit upset with Rebbe. Well, what do you mean, only Sukkot? And this is Klausner. He draws up a 25-page letter to the Rav, citing endless sources, Sifrei Dashanud, etc., that Pesach is also Eretz Yisrael. And he makes copies, passes it around, everyone knows, hands it to the Rav. In those days, the Rav said Shir and YU on Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't think it changed yet. In my time, it was Tuesday, Wednesday. If it did change, then it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in later years after the Rebbetzin had passed away. And the Rav takes it, puts it in his pocket, goes back to Boston, and the next week the whole class is waiting. What will the Rav say? And the Rav takes attendance, and he looks up and he says, Klausner, you're a bigger bucky than I am. Pause. But I still don't agree with you. And Klausner, until the end of his life, boasted about that moment when the Rav said, you are a bigger bucky. Now, so what are you going to derive from this? If someone was sitting there to whom the Rav was Rav Cook, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and you have to remember, when I came in Aliyah, I was brought here by the Encyclopedia Judaica, 69, and I already started teaching. BMT began in 69 too, and they came to me, and I'm the last surviving member of the original BMT faculty that changed the course of the Anglo-Saxon world in relation to Torah and Israel. So when I started teaching in Michal Aaron 60, Yashikaya. I'm teaching in BMT began 53 years ago, 69. But I've been interrupted. You're in good company. I can tell you that Reb Moshe Feinstein's daughter, I once was speaking in Muncie, seven times she stood up and applauded. And if Reb Moshe's daughter, Reb Tendler's wife, applauded, boy, I walked out of there out. But anyway, more important, when I started teaching Mechala, the girls kept on saying, the Rav. Who do you mean, the Rav? Rav Cook. So someone, Rav Cook, would agree with Klansner. All right, so who's the Zionist? And let me give you the key. I've said this many times, people. I have a copyright on it. If you quote it, B'shem Omro, Tavi Gula Leolam. It's very simple. And this is what the Rav taught me. What did the Rav teach me? The Rav studied in Berlin philosophy. He wrote his doctorate on philosophy, Hermann Cohn, the Hegelian dialectics. Hegelian dialectics, and this is all of life. You just saw it a moment ago. A man comes in Aliyah, wants to make a living. Thesis, antithesis, impossible to make a living unless you're black and the money is under the table. Synthesis, forget about a living. All I want to do is know Kol HaTorah Kula. The Rav, you see, Rav Kook was a Zionist at the level of thesis. There's stories about Rav Kook. He studied in the Lashon. I'm going to give lectures on the Lashon, Be'ezrat Hashem, if not later this term, I hope. If not next, that will be Be'ezrat Hashem. Rav Kook was, they say, when he was a Rav in Litta, whenever he mentioned Yerushalayim, he broke into tears. He was kul tzioni from his youth. That's a thesis. The Rav, what's his thesis? Who was his Zayda? Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker walked out of a founding organizational meeting for Agudat Yisrael in 1912, he walked out in anger and would have nothing to do with Agudah. Those are the facts. Forget about what Otzkril tells you. When it comes to the history books, you have a big problem of Sheka and Emet. And it's very bad to teach Sheka because it's pardon me for Mamalashin, it's a Fadobenkeit. When a person can tell lies, you don't know where the lies end. It's not just that YU never turned out a student who had Yirat Shemayim, and they never mentioned Bernard Revel, but once you lie, it becomes part of your character. Forget about that. Let's be honest. By the way, I have a major article coming out in Hakira in a subsequent issue, and you'll see all the footnotes. And Reb Chaim walked out. Why did he walk out? The story is fascinating, and this is verified. I can't make this up. I heard this from Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. I heard it from the Lichtensteins, other members of the family. I heard it 50, 60 years ago already. Why did he walk out? Very fascinating. What was the big chiddush of Agudat Yisrael? To unite Litvakim, Chassidim, and Yekes. All right, if you can unite those three, believe me, it's a challenge. And they wanted unity because by 1900, Torah was falling apart. Anyone who tells you that in Europe it was wonderful and everyone was frum, it's not the truth. By 1900, secular Zionism, Bolshevikism, communism, Bundesism, etc., etc. No different than the United States today and all the liberal progressive Jews with all these wonderful ideologies. The end result, intermarriage, assimilation. Every Jew surrounding Biden, including his own children, is intermarried to Jews that observe nothing. So they wanted to unite. I have to be very brief because this is a topic I can lecture on for 7 years without, and I'm not exaggerating. So they have this meeting, and a Rav from Germany speaks, and Reb Chaim walks out. They say, Rav, can I speak Mama Lashon, or do I have to Tafret and Goyish? Brian, how do I know Yiddish? Did you ever ask that question? My parents were born in Holland. My grandparents came to America teenagers. They were not married yet. How do I know Yiddish? It's very simple. In seventh grade, I had the Shanghai crowd already. They didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. Okay? Draw your own conclusion. I have to thank Sempo Sugi Hara. Das, was ich kenne, das in Yiddish, ich verstehe Yiddish, ich weine Yiddish, und ich lache in Yiddish, it's libin Sempo Sugi Hara, Zeche Tzadik Lachracha. So, this guy speaks, the rabbi, and Reb Chaim says, listen, want to tell you a story. This Reb Chaim Brisk is speaking, not Ani Rothkopf. And he says, my tata, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi, the Beit Halevi, when he moved to a new city, became Rav in Slutsk, I think it was before Brisk, so his wife went into the Markolet, the grocery store. And a kid is working there, 18 years old, and she asked him, how much is this? How much? Wiffel, how much? And the kid answers, Zwei Zlata. How much are the beans? Zwei Zlata. The carrots, Zwei Zlata. She goes over to the owner of the store and says, it can't be that every vegetable is the same price. He says, lady, this kid was born challenged. We hire him as a mitzvah, stucca to the city. He at least can help me. And he wraps up everything in newspaper. And he can only say, Zvei Zlata. I'll tell you the prices when you're finished. Rav Chaim says, I was born challenged. Ich verstehe nur Torah. I only understand Torah. Nothing else. When a rabbi speaks 35 minutes and doesn't quote one Maimah Chazal, that's not for me. And he walked out. He couldn't tolerate. And then the rest is history. Totally anti-Zionist. Och, Rav Chaim. Totally against Agudah. Mizrahi. Mandachashmei, don't mention it. So this was the Rav's background. And that was the thesis. And then he meets the challenges of life. The antithesis or the antithesis. He's caught up already. The interbellum period, post-World War I, Berlin, 1926, the university, Agudat Yisrael in Berlin, and he becomes a Yemekudist, and then the Holocaust. And for many reasons, which I elaborate in the record, the cassettes that were made for the OU, the Holocaust, he becomes a Mizrahiite. And from 1946 on, he's the honorary president of the American Mizrahi movement. And he becomes a Mizrahiite, a Tzioni, a Zionist, in the third period, the synthesis. Unlike Rav Kook, who's their thesis. And this is why the Rav always has to balance out. He's never totally at ease. Read his writings. Read the five drashot, which are being reissued shortly, and elaborated on. You'll see he's always struggling with his past, the present, and the future. Rav Kook did not have those problems. So, of course, anyone who comes from the Beis Medrash of Rav Kook, ala thesis, anyone who comes from the Beis Medrash of the Rav, please understand his life, his challenges, his decisions. Now, let me go one step further. So then, one individual, I don't want to mention names, but some of you know who I'm talking about. They call it a podcast. I don't know what the word means. People say, we love your podcast. I never get a podcast in my life. I'm teaching classes. Podcast, schmatcast, God, they come up with terms. Spiana. We want the old world, but we got to live with the new world. Ein Breira, no choice. I see my great-grandchildren, 2 years old. They know more about the little computer. They're geniuses. My great-grandchildren are all geniuses. It took me 50 years to become fluent in Hebrew, and they're 2 years old, and they're rattling Hebrew so quickly I can barely keep up with them. I don't know. Must be geniuses. I have a sense of humor. That enabled me to survive here. Take my word. I don't know if you're aware. I did basic training at the age of 38. 15 years, I did Miluim. 10 years, my wife and I worked for the Mossad in communist Russia, which is not a small matter. Two books have been written about it, one by the Mossad, B'Netiv HaDmama, and one by a guy named Rakefet. In my seventh volume, Washington, I give you details, and in Rakefet Aaron Chelik Dalad, there are more details. But without a sense of humor, believe me, you don't survive. Anyway, let me tell you something else. So one of the people involved says, and in the end of his life, the Rav certainly changed his mind and left the Zionist movement. Fact. And here I'm telling you the absolute facts. I lived it. Someone just published a book, a very nice volume on Conversations with the Rav. But I'm correcting this story. These are the exact facts. He has the same punchline, but these are the facts. In the 1970s, the president of Israel established a prize for a machaneich in Chutz La'aretz who's done a great deal to help the Zionist movement. And it was called the Shazah Prize. It was named in honor of President Shazah, who I had the privilege of knowing personally. I actually daven every morning. I get Birchat Kohanim from his great nephew. So the Rav was selected. I asked, pardon me for not using titles, I asked Tover and Aaron, why isn't, will the Rav come? They said no. And they accepted the prize. The Liechtensteins accepted the prize in lieu of the Rav. And there was a substantial check, and I think it was lira at the time, made out to the Rav. So they call Rebbe, and Dr. Tova Liechtenstein says to her father, what should we do with the check? And he says, sign my name and give it to Merkaz Yeshivat Bnei Akiva. And this is an absolute fact. So if anyone says that the Rav left Zionism later in life, we're talking the 1970s, the last decade he was really active. Merkaz Yeshivat Bnei Akiva. Okay. Now, I want to go a step further, and I want to mention, I just published an article that it came out, it went public about 2 weeks ago. And I don't know, I told my students I feel this is the most important. I've published thousands of pages in my life, but this is the most important. I have to say, I've gotten comments in these last 2 weeks. Ani modela kadosh baruch hu, that a little kid from the Bronx lives to hear these comments from important people. Now, I'll tell you where this appeared, and I'm going to quote, but I'm going to be very popular now because it's Erev Shabbos, and I'm Mekabel Shabbos early. For me, Shabbos begins today, 5 o'clock. Do you know who Rabbi Mendy Gopin is? Rabbi Mendy Gopin grew up in Boston. He grew up in the Rav's lap. Yeah, very close, the Gopin family, which is a well-known Chabad family to begin with, and in Boston became very close to the Rav. He put out a volume a number of years ago, Davening with the Rav. And now he put out a volume, Ma'aseh HaRav, in commemoration of his 120th birthday and his 30th yahrzeit, Pesach 5783. And he got in touch with me about a year and a half ago, asked me to contribute. And I contributed an article. It begins on page 51. It runs 31 pages. It's a fallout from what's going to be published in Hakira. And the article is entitled Theodor Herzl and Contemporary Zionism in the Context of Joseph and His Brothers. And this volume is available now. And anything I say, you can get it much deeper with all the footnotes. But what I did, I've always been troubled by the Sapmuruv, and some of you know I lectured on the Sapmuruv for a year and a half in the Kollel recently. And I lectured, you know, very honestly, more or less as a Sapmur Chosid, trying to understand the Sapmuruv. And everyone wants to cut my neck off. They want to curse and maledict. And I said, at the end, I'll refute the Sapmuruv. And at the end, he calls Theodor Herzl Avi Avot HaTumah. Rabbi Shalom Gold, I once had a whole debate with him over Satma, and he makes the point that, because he comes from the Haredi world, I come from YU, although I did learn in Lakewood, and I did have a very warm relationship with Rabbi Aaron Cutler, which influences my thinking until this very moment. But I'm essentially a Talmud of the Rav, a YU person. And Shalom Gold, Reb Shalom, who comes from Nei Yisrael, etc., Teir Vidas, he said Satma destroyed the yeshiva world with its malediction of Herzl, and everyone fell for it and bought it. I want to share with you what Rav Soloveitchik said in the talk to the Mizrahi. We don't even have the exact date. It may be the mid-50s, the late-50s. It's one of the five drashot, and I want to apply it to Herzl, to Zionism, to Beit Shemesh, and what's happening at this very moment in our world and our lives. And the Rav made the following point. When it comes to halacha, it is totally the responsibility of the Rav, the man, the human being, to make the decision. And there's a world of this. There's Medrash Rabbah, there's the introduction of the Ktzot to the Ktzot HaChashon, Rabbi Yaleib, Hella. There's Reb Moshe Feinstein, his introduction to Groth Moshe. You see, should God give the Torah or shouldn't he give the Torah? Many of the angels said, how can you give the Torah? Look who we are. What are we? Who are we? This morning when I had to activate my computer in my office in Gris, I typed in my code. I'm happy to tell you my code. Every 6 months, these idiots want you to change it. I go out of my code is J-O-E-D 1941. Nope. Can anyone help me here? Who's my age? I'm talking to a bunch of Ameha Aretz. What's going on? Joe DiMaggio, his greatest year, 1941, 56 straight games. And then I have to answer the most delicate questions that are coming into me from Lakewood, from Chabad, from Nei Yisrael, from Satmar, etc. Why you people listening? That's who you give the Torah to? Sign Cup is with Joe D, 1941. The angels were fighting. The other angels said, there's so much to say on this, I have to be very brief. They threw down the truth. Remember the Medrash Rabbah? We can't expect ultimate truth, perfect truth. But if we're giving it Torah, we have to give it within human context. And this is the Gemara in Baba Metzia. There's no more important Gemara. The Gemara says, the Rav says when he learned the Gemara the first time, he cried. He cried in Cheda. Baba Metzia Daf Nun Tet, where there's a whole machlokes over an oven. Is it tahar or isn't it tahar? Is it pure or isn't it pure? And Rebbe Eliezer, the Chachomim rule against Rebbe Eliezer, said it's pure. Rebbe Eliezer says, Let the heavens collapse, let the Beit Medrash wall cave in, and let the water stand, everything, miracles happen. And they don't listen. And then a heavenly voice says, Halacha bat kol, Halacha k'Rav Eliezer. And they say to their heavenly voice, Lo bashamayim hi. So you see, Halacha, when once God gives the Torah, it is in the hands of human beings. Now, this is why we strive to be b'nei Torah, our minds to be filled with Kedusha, the Torah, our life. I always tell my Talmidim, my life is an open book. Baruch Hashem, b'nei Akiva, whatever you want, check me out. All my life, I've strived, Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Alpi Torah Yisrael. I even had the chutzpah to say that to Rabbi Aaron Kotler. Imagine a kid of 16, and I'm don't want to Rabbi Aaron. And he said, "Noch nicht im Ganzen der richtige Hashkafa." All right, that's halacha. When it comes to Hashkafa, the Rav says you can have all the opinions in the world, but you have to see what is happening, what God wants. In halacha, you never look over your shoulder. In hashkafa, how to act, how to live, you must constantly look over your shoulder. Now, the Rav put this into a homiletic drasha. You should know Rav Shach never criticized the Rav. Privately, I happen to have a very close connection. Some of you know that my very close friend was Rav Shach's only son, Effie Shach. We sat in Bernard Ravel Graduate School for years in the same classes. Later, I came in Aliyah, I came in 69. He came back from America a few years later. We wind up, he davens in my son-in-law, runs his shul. He's unfortunately not alive. Effie Shach, Zichrono Levracha. But whenever I would daven with my children and my grandchildren, I would be sitting next to Effie and we'd be telling stories about our professors in Bernard Revel Graduate School. So I had a direct connection to Rav Shach. Rav Shach would say about the Rav, Eken, Mirken, and Mishnah, that only he can combine Torah in the Western world, but we cannot. We're not on that level. But he never criticized the Rav in writing. This drasha of Yosef Yechov, which is one of the Chamesh drashot, that's the only time he ever criticized the Rav in writing. You'll see in my footnote, I give you the exact source, volume 4 of Rav Shach's collected letters. He criticizes the Rav. And he says about this drasha I'm about to tell you very quickly. He says, Ein lanu mesoret also. We don't have a tradition. And Rakefet says very simply, since when do you need a tradition on dashanut, on homiletics? Homiletics, by definition, ein meshivin al hadrush. Homiletics, your mind is free, the rabbinic mind, etc., the dashan, etc. But Rav Shach, but whether the Rav's drasha stands or doesn't stand, the concept that I just mentioned is 100% correct. Halacha, ein somken al habat kol. We don't ask God, we ask the Rav. Only Moshe Rabbeinu could ask the Ribbono Shel Olam. Once Moshe is gone, the process has to work in human channels. Hashkafa, look at the ground. What's happening? So the Rav said, what was the machloikas between Yosef and his brothers? The brothers couldn't understand what's bothering Yosef. Yosef sees the sun, the moon, a whole new generation, everyone bowing down to him. He's telling the brothers, we have to get ready for the exile in Egypt. We're going to be exiled in a country that's high-tech, way beyond what we have in Eretz Yisrael, where we're farmers and shepherds. We got to get ready. The brothers are laughing at him. Why are you concerned with the future? We're here now. Everything is wonderful. Everything is good. Don't rock the boat. And the Rev went on to show that the Ribbono Shel Olam agreed with Yosef HaTzadik. We're going to go into an alien, new, much more advanced culture. We have to be prepared. And the Rav compared this to the Aguda and the Mizrahi. The Aguda couldn't see the future. They were happy. We're in Warsaw. We're in Lodz. We're in Vilna. We're in Slabodka. We're in Mir. We're in Panovich. Why worry about tomorrow? But the Mizrahi was concerned. The world is shaking. We're not going to be here much longer. We're not going to have quality life, peace of mind, and ultimately our own bodies are going to be destroyed. Prepare for tomorrow, Eretz Yisrael, a homeland. And the Rav said, who was right? You have to look around. Look what happened. The Holocaust, we just celebrated Yom HaShoah. God have mercy, stories that are still being told. I just buried a student, Herbie Maltz, Chaim Maltz. I know him since 1962 when I came a young man. My first rabbinate, I got my years pinned back. Lower Merion Synagogue, I was re-elected by a vote of 9-7. Charlie Lieberman, remember Professor Lieberman, the sociologist, Zichrono Livracha? He became famous on his article in Judaism, and he analyzes the 9 people who voted for me and why 7 voted against me. And when it says young rabbi, cross out young rabbi and write in Aaron Rothkopf. Yours truly. Then I came to Maplewood and my whole life changed. South Orange. I built the first Orthodox shul, which still stands, suburban Essex County. And that's where I met Herbie Maltz. He was one of the few religious families in Essex County, in Newark afterwards, Elizabeth. And Herbie became my student in Israel. How he survived what that man went through. A book was written, a movie was made. A Polish Catholic lady hid the family in a barn for the entire Holocaust, how what they ate, how they survived, how she could sneak them food. It's a fascinating question. That's why you can't generalize. There were plenty of Poles and Ukrainians who cooperated with the Nazis, and there were Poles and Ukrainians who risked their lives, and some paid for it with their own lives, saving Jews. You can't generalize, but look what we went through, and the Rav cries out, where would we be without the state of Israel? Now, let me go one step further beyond the Rav. You know something? This state could only come about because of someone like Theodor Herzl. And I'll quote a Chazal. I'll quote a Medrash Rabbah, Shmuel. The exact source is in the article. Moshe Rabbeinu, where was he raised? Herbie, not in the Bronx like we were raised. He was raised, we were poor kids, Bronx kids. I remember we used to go to Yankel Stadium and we'd look for someone at the turnstile. They would be retired gentlemen, look for a Jewish guy, a Yiddish, a mensch. And 2 yeshiva boys would sneak in for the price of 60 cents, 1 bleacher ticket. He would say, oh, in Leamington yeshiva, kum, schnell, geht da runter, woo, in. Okay. Where was Moshe Rabbeinu? He didn't have to sneak in. He didn't have to go to the bleachers. He bought box seats. Paro's court, dignity. Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest Jew who ever lived. The Medrash asked this question. Why was he raised? And the Medrash says so beautifully, had he been raised among the Jews, no one would have listened to him. No Hashnara, no Chayit, no, we're going out of Egypt, we're going, what does he know? What does he know? Kind Paro's court? Ah. Oh. This man is special. Imagine, we had great Rabbanim with Zionists long before Herzl. Rabbis Alkali, Mulava, Kalisha, you're talking giants of Torah, Rabbi Yoshua Trunk. Who paid attention? Herzl assimilated. At one point thought we can solve our problems marching into the church. And he gave us this message. And people listened. And ultimately, he saved everybody. Where would we be today? Who could speak? Ben-Gurion would listen to a Rav. Golda Meir would listen to a Rav. Ehud Barak would listen to a Rav. Aaron Barak would listen to a Rav. Come on. But it saved the Jews. Baruch Hashem. We have the state. We have endless Balei Tshuva here. When I was growing up, we didn't even know what the term Balei Tshuva meant. Today I fight a battle, I don't like that word Balei Tshuva, it doesn't apply. I said the other day to one of my Talmidim at Tzaddik, I said, you and I can be Balei Tshuva. I know your father, great Rav. I've only been associated with Gedolei Yisrael since 7th grade, since what I told Brian before, the Shanghai crowd. I can be a Balei Tshuva. But these Jews in North Tel Aviv, in Dizengoff, they never learned a Pasuk Chumash in their life. What did Uri Zohar say? Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. He said, I grew up in Israel. I had a fabulous education. But the most important part of my identity, I was never taught. Torah Hashem Tamima. And how do you say Balei Tshuva? I used to, in the army, I always used the word legarot, legalot et hamakarot, legalot et hadam betocha arkin. Ani bad be'etz gadol. I'm one branch of a big tree. Discover that tree. Discover the blood in your veins. And it had to come about. Moshe Rabbeinu, Theodor Herzl. And it could very well be, had Theodor Herzl lived longer, we would see him sitting here, the covered Uda Tiferet. And I have a very fascinating footnote. Tell me, who coined the word Zionism? Birnbaum, Nathan Birnbaum, totally assimilated Jew, coined the word Zionism. Herzl. One of his unterfuhrers, one of his assistants. Where did he wind up later? Nathan Birnbaum? Major theologian of Agudat Yisrael. Who was his grandson? Anyone here of Russian origins? Yoma, where are you? No, who was his grandson? David Birnbaum. The man who founded SSSJ. Jacob Birnbaum. Excuse me, correct. I always get confused because there's another David Birnbaum. Yaakov Birnbaum, the man who founded SSSJ. You follow? Who knows what had been with Herzl, but he became what he saw in France, Dreyfus, the hatred against the Jews, his whole life. His wife was angry at him. His children suffered. His whole life became Zionism. And he paid for it. A heart attack at the age of 44. And read my essay, how the masses related to him with such love and affection. When he visits Vilna and the Jews, the masses come out and he sees the poverty and finally, one Jew comes just to touch his hand and he wants to give him a gold coin. And Herzl says, I want you to be able to breathe a little. And this Jew says, I don't want anything. I just came to see you because you're the king of Israel. And whoever heard of a Jew turning down a gold coin? Just in shul this morning, there are people collecting, at least in my shul. But this was the impact. This is on the ground. Open your eyes and see what's happening. The Satmar Rav attributes it to Satan, to Satan, to the black side of God. I don't know. I want to believe in a living God, in a Ribbono Shel Olam, in a Kaddish Baruch Hu. The miracles, and we've paid a heavy price. It has been difficult and not easy. I need not mention what we have gone through. Two young boys, two young men, and a mother and two daughters. God, look, we must move on and go further and accomplish. Okay. Now, let's look at the ground and see what's happening before our eyes. And here, right, the ground of Israel, where do you walk, where do you go? Most people, when they come to high office, including Netanyahu, where do they go? They go to the Kotel, Lahodot LaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it mean, going to the Kotel? Going to the Kotel means that you understand, you acknowledge, you have some vibes of the saga of the Torah people. The Kotel represents our past, our present, our future. Makom HaMikdash. Where did Lapid go? Man became prime minister. Bennett had arranged this. He goes to Yad Vashem. Yad Vashem. What does Yad Vashem represent? Yad Vashem represents something very powerful. Lapid and his people, our brethren, they have no concept of the Jewish saga. No past, no future. Yad Vashem represents a simple idea. I'm only living in Israel because if I live anywhere else, they'll throw me into the gas chambers. Lapid's family suffered, right or wrong. His father, Tommy, he paid the send from Gedolei Yisrael, great Hungarian Rabbanim. But you see, there's a tremendous chasm here. Why are we here? When I came in Aliyah, Beit Shemesh was the end of the world. Backwater country. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Beit Shemesh today, it's the only city in Chutz Laretz that observes one day Yontif. If they catch anyone in Beit Shemesh speaking Hebrew, they arrest them for desecration of airspace. Why did you come in Aliyah? Why did I come in Aliyah? It's a total different feeling. This is Eretz HaKodesh. We have here people, fourth and fifth generations, raised on no knowledge. They have never learned the Pasuk Chumash in their life. If they open up a Tanakh, it's the way we opened up Latin and Greek literature. And I have to tell you, this obligates us because these are Jews. And we have to be concerned that the Jews come back to the totality of their existence, the past, the present, the future. We have to reach out. We have to explain Kiruv. What's going on today? I'm overwhelmed. Professionals involved and their success. I don't say you have 100%, but you look at the NCSY. I can testify that when I taught in the collegiate level, some of the best students I ever taught were products of NCSY, both women and men. Even in the Kollel, I occasionally had students, how did you become from? And the stories they would tell me. My parents went to see Fiddler on the Roof. They heard the song Tradition, and it bothered them. Tradition. What does it mean? What do I do? And we joined an Orthodox synagogue. And I went to NCSY. And we Anglos, who you look at South Africa, more than 50% of the Jewish population is Shomer Shabbos today. And 90% of the Jews in South Africa who are Shomer Shabbos are Balei Tshuva. I was in Cape Town. I couldn't believe what I saw. I was in Johannesburg. The head of the Chevra Kaddisha in Johannesburg told me, we have a rule, you can't be a member of the Chevra Kaddisha unless you've been Shomer Shabbos for 10 years. So what does that tell you? So we have an obligation, but we have to understand where we're coming from, where we're at, and where they are at. And the concept of the Kotel, vis-a-vis Yad Vashem, both important institutions, but what is the message? And that explains a great deal of the contemporary Israeli scene. I want to go one step further. And I see Stephanie is perpetuating the event. I have to be honest, between Brian and Stephanie, you brought me out here, Bal Kocha Ya'aneh Amen. Okay, Emily Embre Ra, but I am 85 years old and my strength is limited. A Ravon Mugbal. And I want to go one step further. In all this controversy, and I need not tell you, I stand with the right wing. I have my own outlook and hashkafa, and I've been exposed to many great people in my life. Bnei Akiva, I was raised on the lap of Meir Kahana. When my students would talk with Meir, he would say, who's your Rebbe? Kefet? Ask him who made him into a Zionist. And he was the Rosh Ken, I was the Skan Rosh Ken, Mizracha, in the Bronx. So but I want you to understand, there are some real problems that partially are 100% the fault of so-called Torah Jews. And I want to touch upon two aspects of life here that are critically important. If we could solve these problems, we would see a massive return to the Torah saga of our people. And let me spell it out. I'm a religious Zionist Jew. I try my best to observe every mitzvah and every halacha. When you start throwing mitzvah and halacha out because it doesn't suit you, you are starting the process of Reform Judaism. Today we have two tremendous areas where so-called religious Jews, in my humble opinion and in the opinion of Shas and Paiskim, are Reform Jews, capital R. One area is the core curriculum. Every father and mother, we are obligated to teach our children core curriculum. No, it's an open Gemara. Kedushin, Daf Chaf Tet, Umanut, Ha'av Chayav L'Lameid, Livno Umanut. You have to read the Rav's essay, Isha Halacha, was a magnificent essay, the first thing the Rav published. We have to educate our children that they should be able to live in dignity. Who ever heard of opposing core curriculum? Math, English, computers. And in Israel, you could do it beautifully. When you teach math, we have textbooks. The Mamlachti Dati system has textbooks. You can teach Trumat Maisra. How much Truma? What percentage? Maisra, 150th. 1/60th, 1/40th, 1/10th. There's so much that you can break into the text to show a combination of Torah and life. And here we have that ability. When you oppose, and it's the Belzer, I don't want to go into details, but the Belzer ever who's ahead of the game will have core curriculum. The ceiling came down on him. And then what is the statement you're making? Our children become charity wards. And this comes up in the whole discussion that you hear right now between pro and con, left and right. And I want to state publicly, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. Open the Rambam, Hilchat Talmud Torah, Perek Gimel. Core curriculum? Adarabah. Teach our children. Let them come out with the ability to live, to thrive, and have a dignified existence that separates a human being from the animal kingdom. And at the basis of it, you have to be able to sustain yourself, your family. That's one problem. But there's a greater problem that frightens me. Mamish Reform Judaism. No, the Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Dalet, the Rambam, Hilchot Malachim, Perek Zayin. Actually, I'm going to be dealing with this in my Sunday class very shortly with women's role. Tell me, is there any greater milchama that we have now, a milchemic mitzvah? The Arabs want to kill us, every man, woman, and child. They don't want us in Yehuda v'Shomron, and anyone outside of Biden who can read English translations will see they don't want us in Tel Aviv or Haifa as well. You have a tax right in Tel Aviv. What does that have to do with Yehuda v'Shomron? God have mercy, Milchemet Mitzvah. Tell me, what does the Mishnah say about Milchemet Mitzvah? Even the Chatan and Kala have to fight. How can we not serve in Tzva Haganah LiYisrael? How can Jews, after the Holocaust, you want to be from? Tell me, Brian, you want to be from? I'll tell you how to be from. Start a party that will declare anyone who's Mechalel Shabbos we kick out of the army. Is that correct or not? Mi hayish hayarev rav halevav. Did you ever talk between Tfilin Shel Yad, Tfilin Shel Rosh, between Yishtabach to Yotzah? That's what the Gemara says. They kick you out of the army. We, the Tzrum, the Tzadikim, we have to be the Tzva Haganah LiYisrael. And let me tell you, this is a tremendous problem in the state of Israel. You have so some wise guy will say, who the heck is this Rakeset? He thinks he's smarter than all the Rabbanim and the whole so-called Haredi world. I say very simply, could you imagine what the situation would be here had the Belzer Rebbe, the Gerer Rebbe, the Munkacher Rebbe, back in 1880, said, Jews, go and Aliyah. Could you picture what kind of country we would have instead of the second Aliyah, 1904 to 1914, which developed the entire state of mind of the country that continues until today? Could you picture what would be here today? An enclave of Torah, Hasidus, Torah. But no one spoke out. And these people who went and they built the state. We have to give them credit for it. That's one thing to think about. Another thing, you think you're overly wise? Who are we? What are we? You have to look on the ground. I take you back to 1940, 1941. Could you imagine where 90% of the people sitting in front of me would be if the Rabbanim had listened to Reb Chaim Eisen and not taken the simple Sugi Hara pieces? This is a problem that lives on, a theological question. In my forthcoming article, you'll see endless sources. Many people have written about it. But this is exactly what the Rav was saying. We have to see what's going on. We have to check on the ground. We have to look to our left. We have to look to our right. This is not the Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha that the Rabbanim have to look only in front of them and the person asking the question. And this is a powerful message that I got from Rebbe. So to reiterate, I apologize. I touched upon a lot of points that I could back up every syllable I said with many sources. But Erev Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, time is a factor. I want to just summarize, because whenever I heard a shiur from the Rav, it would begin, Vasav Migazok, let's tavach. What did we say last week? And then at the end of the shiur would be, Vasav Migazok, time. What did we say today? So, what did we do today? First of all, I hope I established the case that you have to understand the difference between the Rav and Rav Kook. One is a Zionist a la thesis. One only gets there with the synthesis. But anyone who says the Rav was not a Zionist and changed his mind, just think of the story I told you, which is absolutely, I lived it. It's documented. The book just got said, the book came out. It's a little detail there, which is not factual. But these are the exact facts. And the Rav said, give the money, endorse my signature, and give it to Merkaz Yeshiva B'nai Akiva. That's in the 1970s. The whole question of Halacha, Hashkafa, Yosef and his brothers, Theodor Herzl, Moshe Rabbeinu, the court of Paro, and coming right down to the contemporary world, the world in which we are living and struggling, suffering to a certain degree, the Kotel vis-a-vis Yad Vashem. Fascinating. What we saw and what we see. But it obligates us. We who are from the greater YU world, reach out, set an example, teach. You don't affect all the lives, but you affect some. And you have no idea what that means. I can tell you from my own life, people I had an influence on, today they're 50, 60 descendants, Rubam Kekulam, Shomrei Torah Mitzvah, of one man and woman that I had an influence on 50, 40, 30 years ago. The whole question of Israel, the whole machloket, but the core curriculum and Tzva Hagana Yisrael, crucial issues. And we from the greater YU world have to set the example. It is very possible. I remember when Rav Ovadia went to America for the first time, he came back and told me he was overwhelmed. Wherever he went, he saw groups learning Torah, inviting him to give his shiur. And who were they? He says, Lo Rabbanim, PhDs, doctors, lawyers. He says, Ruvam Kukulam, Talmidim shel ha-yeshiva shelcha, Yeshiva University. So, you see, we have an obligation. We came from a beautiful background, and we have to take it further, influence and build, and Be'ezrat Hashem, this should be a beautiful chodesh, and the chagim ba'im aleinu letovah should be lekaved u'letiferet. Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, and thank you very, very much.
Shin Shin Vav. Shin Shin Vav.
Go ahead, Rabbi. Before anyone gets up,
please allow me to, first of all, thank the sponsors again, the Beit Shemesh Community, Beit Midrash Initiative, Yeshiva University of Israel, our fearless leader there, Stephanie Strauss, thank you for all your help. Yeshiva University in America, YU REITs Israel America, Mizrahi World Movement, OU Israel, RCA Israel, Or Torah Stone. I want to thank Zev and Judy Berman. I want to thank, I forgot to mention, Rabbi Eli and Hani Rosenzweig, who have sponsored part of the events. And the Sub Talmud, anonymous Sub Talmud, whoever you are, you're in your submarine somewhere. Anyway, so you're thank you for being anonymous. You don't know who you are. We have no radar on you as well. I just want to go through three next shiurim. We have that.